Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. Welcome to the Health Home Implementation Webinar Series, EHR 101. During the presentation, all participants will be in a listen-only mode. Afterwards, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. At that time, if you have a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone. If you would like to ask a question during the presentation, please use the chat feature located in the lower left corner of your screen. If you need to reach an operator at any time, please press star 0. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded Wednesday, June 6th, 2012. I would now like to turn the conference over to Denise Riley, Executive Director of eHealth Network of Long Island. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much, and thank you all for attending. Electronic Health Records 101 is supposed to be a broad overview of diving into the electronic health record world. We're hoping that this presentation can prepare your organization for questions that you'll need to ask the EHR vendor or vendors that you are looking at purchasing their software from, and also help to answer, to know what questions that you need to answer internally to help identify your needs before you begin this process. So electronic health records has been defined many different ways. Depending on who you are in the organization, if you're the doctor, if you're the practice owner, the vendor, you know, some people think it's a plot for insurance companies to control physicians or a computer tool that clinicians pay for and everyone else benefits from. A lot of different aspects out there of how people define electronic health records. And then there's the definitions of, you know, Wikipedia listed as an electronic record for all your medical information, searchable and available to those who are allowed to use it. With all those different definitions out there, if you speak to your staff about rolling out an EMR, there's probably a lot of justifications for doing it. I started to list for you some rationale for an EHR, and this is just basically what the clerical staff would say. It takes a long time to locate a record. The handwriting's ineligible. There's so many volumes of it, and when you have to update a volume, you don't have the information from the patient's initial visits, the consent form, where do you put it. The charts take up a lot of space to file. So the paper world is very overwhelming, and there's a lot of rationale. This list could go on and on, but there is a lot of reasons of why an EHR is beneficial. But also, when you think about that, it raises many questions, and it can be very scary. What system do I choose? What about my old records? How do I train my staff? How much will it cost? Very overwhelming questions. But the first thing an organization needs to do is to address some really broad questions and determine, from that organization's perspective, what is non-negotiable. So what we tried to do here was list some questions for you to look at so that you could have somewhere to start. There's a lot of different areas that you have to look at. A lot of this depends on you doing your own homework about who you are as an organization. So hopefully some of these questions can, you know, start that conversation in your organization. Can the software be tailored to the current workflow that you have? Where do you want to access the system? How do you operate? Do you operate out of an office? Do you operate out of the community? Do you need a tablet? Do you need to do it from home? Do you need remote access? Administrative privileges. As who gets to authorize staff to use the system? How do you want to make changes in the system? If you want to customize it, all of that background stuff about who gets to do the stuff in the system once it's there are questions you need to ask. Do you want a client-server EHR or what's known as a SaaS EHR? And SaaS, just so you know, we use a lot of acronyms in IT. SaaS is Software as a Service. You also may have heard it as ASP, Application Service Provider. Basically, the difference between a client-server and a SaaS EHR is the client-server is you do it yourself. The SaaS server is they do it for you. So with the client-server, you have to have IT staff on-site. They're going to maintain this. You need a data center or a closet or a location of where you're going to put this hardware because you're holding your data. It's staying within your facility. You have to be concerned about backing it up and the power and the cooling for the servers. You have to make sure that you do hardware refreshes so that, you know, the lifetime of the hardware runs for about 3 to 6 years depending on which hardware you purchase. So you're going to have to invest in new hardware after that time period's up. That's really what the client server is, the client server EHR is. You have to pay for the IT staff and pay for the space to store it. The SaaS is you're paying somebody else to do it. They're going to hold your data. And basically, you might have heard the concept that data is stored in the cloud. There's no technical staff. The data is stored in somebody else's data center. It's not in your closet. And there, one most important question you want to ask if you're going with a SaaS model is this a dedicated or a shared hosted model? And basically what that means is there's a bunch of servers in a data center. Is that server specifically for your facility, or are you sharing that server with other clients? And if you are sharing it with other clients, then the security comes in as the question. So it's really preference when you're out there as to which one you want. Again, knowing a little bit about your organization, if you have the space, if you have IT staff, can help steer you one way or the other for either one of those types of servers. You also want to look, again, at the types of reports that you're going to be generating. I had one doctor tell me once that, you know, this whole report concept is similar to cocaine. And I said, cocaine, that seems like a very odd analogy. And he said, it's like a drug. He said, you know, if you never had information before and you take a little bit of it and you get a little bit of a report out of your system, all of a sudden you want more, and it's an addiction. So I see what he meant by that. There is some, you know, I guess some comparison. It seemed very odd the first time he said it, but it is like a drug in a sense, the fact that if you have everything on paper, you're never able to extrapolate information from it and see any types of quantitative data about the patients that you care for. This way, you're able to see all the patients that live in a certain zip code, or all the patients who have diabetes, or all the patients who are under the age, you know, of 10. You can look at all of that information in a reporting format, and that is one of the biggest advantages also of having an EHR. So you want to ask the questions about how are reports generated. Do you get a canned set of reports, or can you run them at any time? If a special report comes up, if there's a grant that comes out and you need to know how many patients fall into that category, how are you able to get that information out of the computer? You also want to look about installation and training. Training is a big deal, because most people go in and they buy the system and then they, you know, think they have enough training, but it's never enough training. You always need more. So you want to ask, is it hands-on training? Is it web training? Is it on-site? How long is somebody on-site? What happens after 5 o'clock? Because everybody knows everything happens after 5 o'clock, so, or 4:30. So you want to know, who are you calling? Are you getting manuals? Are there references that the staff can go to? All of that questions, again, about when you have this stuff, what are you doing about it? Going back to another part of the reporting pieces, a lot of input has to look into how you put the data in the system. There's various different methods for inputting data. It could be very rigid drop-down menus that you actually have to select from to put a patient's information in. Or it could be a free text field that gets filled in by typing or voice recognition. The voice recognition and the free text make it very hard to pull reports and quantify that data. So you want to look at how do your physicians practice, or how does your providers practice, and how is that best going to work for you to get that information out of the system. You also want to think about the technical support, again, based on which model you pick, but who's going to provide the support. You want to look at the maintenance and updating the system. How do you update? How do you get the new version? Do you have to be charged for that? You know, when you look at when you buy a system, you also want to think about that when you go to buy a car, you go to a lot of different dealerships beforehand. So you can do the same thing. Go to a lot of different vendors. But make sure you look at the service component. Don't buy for the sales department. Buy for the service department, because they're the people that you're truly going to be connected with afterwards. So you really want to make sure about that support and that technical staff that you have. You want to look at disaster recovery. God forbid something happens. Where is your data? Again, depending on whether you went SaaS model or client server, how do you recover your data? How long do they keep your records? There's different organizations that have different requirements of how long records are maintained. How do you access records from, you know, 5 years ago or something? that type of information, again, is something that you want to ask. So there's a lot of different features, and you want to come up with a list. This is, again, a small list, but it gives you some place to start about some features that some practices want in an EMR. You're going to put that list together, pull everything together, come back with your must-haves, your nice-to-haves, and your want-to-buy-in-the-futures. Put them all and put them in a bucket. Decide what you think is important to have now, maybe what you can afford right now. But put it all on paper and have a discussion with the people in your organization that you work with. When you put that information together, you want to rate your vendors. You want to take them side by side, look at cost, functionality, vendor characteristics, and you want to look at the influential people in your organization to help make the decisions with you. Your physicians, your nurses, your office manager. Maybe it's the most skeptical employee that you have, or maybe it's the most positive employee you have. But you put together a team of people that you think are going to help you to get this decision made. Remember, the most influential people are not always the ones with the titles, and that's important because this has to be successful. And sometimes the naysayer, putting them on the team and letting them be part of that conversation can help you to make this as successful as possible. You also want to be sure that you know or have the following things. You want to have a clear understanding of your organization and your operations. That may sound like, yeah, I know how my organization works, but you really want to know the specifics of it. You want to know the process, and you want to know what parts can be changed. This is a good time to look at refreshing your workflow, not to change everything, but to think about maybe you can do things a little bit more efficiently. So you want to have a good understanding of your organization's operations. You want to know what you need, what you want, what you can afford. Put them into buckets. Make those lists so you have an idea. Understand the current electronic systems you have right now and which of them need to interact with your EHR. So you could have a billing system or a scheduling system that is already in place. You put all of your patients, make all their appointments in one electronic system. You need that system to speak to your EHR. It's your billing system on the back end. You need this EHR to speak to your billing system. Whether you're going to connect to a Rio, whether you're going to be part of a clinical integration team, you want to know what functionality your EHR has to connect to these other electronic systems. And those current electronic systems may be something else that you want to refresh. Maybe you're not so thrilled with the registration system. Again, this is a good time to look at that. Some of the EHR systems also have billing and registration systems. So take a look at them, see if they have any more advantage than the one you already have, if you have one. You want to implement an EHR, and you want to understand that it's not a one-time event. You need a good understanding of the support and the service department of the EHR vendor because you are going to have a relationship with them, and you want to make sure that your expectations of what they're going to do are clear. An EHR will have a huge impact to your organization. If a vendor tells you, oh, no, it's going to be, you know, piece of cake, we're not going to change anything, run. Run really fast because it does have a huge impact on your organization. But it can have a very positive impact. But it will have an impact on the way you care for your patients and you manage your patients. And you want to make sure that you put out that expectation ahead of time. Remember to communicate to your staff to anticipate changes of that workflow and that process. If you prepare them ahead of time for that and you communicate to them over and over that this is going to change, make them part of the decision, it also will make for it to be very successful. And you also want to anticipate and be prepared for resistance. It's out there, and you want to just make sure that you are prepared for that. Then you want to look at how to implement this specifically to your facility. So, again, thinking about how you operate in your facility. If you're a doctor's office, you think about how do you see patients? Do you... one provider at a time is a way that you can roll this out. You want to have just one doctor be the one that's going to roll this into their office. Maybe you only want to do new patients to start out with. You want to flip a switch and have everybody do it on the same day. Big organizations tend to do what we call a stair climb rollout is that they'll, you know, they're too big to just flip a switch and everybody does it on the same time. So usually hospitals do physician documentation, you know, in their first rollout, nurse documentation. For smaller practices, you may want to think about doing the last patient of the day so that you're not impacting the whole flow of the patient. So you pick one doctor and his last patient or her last patient of every day is how they get familiarized with the system. Maybe you want to use the most resistant provider so that you can win them over, or maybe you want to use the most computer savvy provider so that you can, you know, work out the workflow issues. But you want to think specifically about your organization, how you're going to roll that out. Then you want to think about the specifics to your practice about how do you operate. So for physician offices, maybe you have two exam rooms for each doctor. So we call those swing rooms. So you go into each of those rooms, and do you go in with a tablet? Is there a PC in the room? Where is the PC? And if you're sitting with the PC, where's the patient? So you want to set it up to make sure that your back's not to the patient. Use the computer as an educational tool where you're sharing the information with the patient. So it's basically the screen is faced half towards the patient, half towards you, and you can show them their x-rays, show them their information, so that it's not an intrusive part of the exam, but more a collaborative tool that you could use. You want to know your printer needs. Do you need a printer in every office, or maybe there's just one central location? Who's going to be the users in the system? Does the registration clerk, does the nurse, who needs access to it? And you want to look at the patient flow. So does the nurse see the patient before the doctor, or does the nurse see the patient after the doctor? And which pieces of documentation need to be in the system before the doctor sees the patient? So if you have to document the blood pressure before the doctor gets to see the patient, you want to make sure that that's in the system and it's going with the flow of how you're seeing patients. So talking and bringing EHRs into the health home to figure out who needs to have an EHR as part of a health home. So the application right now says that both lead applicants and eligible providers, participants in a health home need a certified EHR. So the definition for eligible providers is listed on the CMS website. And certified EHRs, the list of certified EHRs are also listed on the CMS website. There's two types of certifications. One is modular certification and the other one is a complete certification. Modular certification is giving a certification to a specific section of an EHR, where complete is giving the certification to the whole EHR. So you want to know that ahead of time so that you can know what pieces you're buying of the EHR, whether you're getting the whole EHR has been certified or whether just a certain section of it has. All the participants in a health home need to be contributing data electronically within 18 months. So you're probably saying, okay, so I'm not an eligible provider and I'm not a lead participant, but I am a participant, not the lead applicant, but I am a participant, but I need to be contributing data electronically. How do I do that? Well, there's two ways to contribute data. Either you purchase a whole EHR system or you implement what's called an EHR Lite product. So there are some RIOs in this state that offer EHR Lite products, and I just, you know, want to caution that an EHR Lite product is a little bit of an EMR, basically, is what it is. So if you're still doing everything on paper and say you decide that you're going to share allergies as the data that you want to contribute to the health homes, so you're documenting Denise Riley's allergies, and normally you would put this on paper in a chart. You would write it in the chart, but now you would log on to this EHR Lite and you would put just that piece of information into the system. You could put it in electronically and then print it out and put it in the chart, but there is some concern that you have to worry about with duplication of documentation. You are technically putting it in two places with an EHR Lite product, and that can impact your workflow. It could also be an easier way for you to do it because there's just certain pieces of data you want to share, but we do caution people to let you know that there are different impacts of having an EHR Lite. So how does this all come together and fit together with the RIO, because, again, one of the requirements is that you have to be a member of a RIO or join a RIO if you're going to be in a health home. So a RIO stands for Regional Health Information Organization. And a RIO brings together healthcare stakeholders within a defined geographic area and governs health information exchange among them for the purpose of improving healthcare in the community. A RIO's focus is to improve clinical and the economic health of the community. They're patient-centric in nature. They provide secure electronic means for information to flow as a health information exchange. And they're non-for-profit organizations comprised of diverse set of stakeholders to improve the patient's care. RIOs basically, in a nutshell, act as pipes between your organizations. And the pipes can go both ways. They can be bidirectional. You can view information and you can see information. So in this diagram that you're looking at, the eHealth Network of Long Island, which is the RIO that I work with, is in the middle of all of these organizations. Anybody could be in a RIO, hospital, nursing home, physician office, lab. Anyone who's involved in a patient's care can be part of a RIO, as well as the patient themselves, as you can see by the little person in the diagram. And the way the patient becomes part of the conversation is by inputting their data into what's called a patient health record. And the patient health record can also contribute data into the RIO. By having this bidirectional pipe, you're allowing each of these entities to view data that's in the RIO about a patient, as well as contribute data to the RIO about the patient. We mentioned HIEs, and a lot of people get a little confused as to RIO versus an HIE. And to just tell you from 30,000 feet, the RIO is the entity that governs the health information exchange. The actual activity or the process of moving that data is actually the exchange. So in the end, they do the same thing, but one is actually the entity and the other one is the activity. But it does get a little confusing sometimes with all the acronyms. The rationale for a RIO overall is to improve a patient's outcome, decrease the cost, assist providers with making medical clinical decisions by giving them a broader view of the patient's care, and most importantly, making it easier for the patient so that as they go from place to place, the information about the care that was rendered to them is available. And of course, it's to help them duplicate, to eliminate the duplication of testing that could happen for a patient. So in the state of New York, there are 12 RIOs. This diagram actually shows 13. Two of them have merged together since then, but there are this many RIOs in the state, and the New York eHealth Collaborative is in the process of now getting these RIOs to talk to each other. So no matter which RIO you're in, you can see the information about the patient across the state. The RIOs have some major differences between them. Some of them have their revenue models. Some of them have a membership fee. Other ones have a fee for a transaction. The way the consent is built for their RIO in New York State, we'll talk a little bit about the consent coming up, but the way that you get the patient's consent can vary from RIO to RIO. The architecture of how the data is stored and what involvement that the data has, whether it's at your location or at a certain hub, is also different. And the variety of the EHR vendors supporting. There's several different health information exchange softwares that are in the state. And like I said, the New York eHealth Collaborative is working to get these different health information exchange to communicate together. When you're looking at different RIOs and which RIOs to join, you want to consider, sorry, I jumped the slide, when you want to consider a couple of points. In the state of New York, we are an opt-in state, meaning that you can ask a patient if they want, when they're consenting, the patient is consenting for the facility to view the information about them in the RIO. So you're asking, you're saying, Hospital X, I allow you to see the information about me that's in the RIO. That's what the state law is right now. It's only to ask the patient to consent for the facility to view the information. there's two ways, again, that you can ask for the patient's consent. You can ask them to consent one facility at a time, or you can do what's called a multi-site consent. You can go to one site, and it asks for the consent of 10, 20, as many organizations as you want at one time, and you can consent that way. Patients between the ages of 10 to 17 right now, according to law in New York, are not allowed to be in a RIO. So the parent can consent for the patient up to 9 years of age. From 10 to 11, they're not allowed to be in a RIO, and there are some special interest groups that helped put that law together. And then at the age of 18, a patient's allowed to consent and be back in the RIO if they'd like to. So you want to find out from the RIO's perspective, how do they handle that? How do they manage that patients between those ages are not consented and that their data is not going to be seen? You also want to ask, how do they audit information? If a patient wants to know how many people have seen their documentation, or if you want to know as an organization who has looked at the patient's information, how does the RIO take care of auditing and how do they conduct their audits? You also want to know about user roles. Does everyone who have access to the RIO have the same type of access? Most RIOs have different types of user roles. So if you're a doctor, you get one type of access. If you're a non-clinical staff member, you get another type of access. So you want to ask about user roles. You also want to know that the patient has to be consented prior to treatment. The point of this, again, is prior to making a healthcare decision, provider has all the information about the patient that has been already, with services that have already been rendered to them. So where is the consent process taking place in the organizations that are part of the RIO, and how is that consent obtained? How does the RIO handle withdrawing a consent? If a patient decides that they no longer want to be in a RIO, how does the organization go about withdrawing that consent? How do you process to view the consent or to view the data? So you can look at it through an EMR or you can look at it through a portal. You want to understand how the RIO does that. And you also want to understand that when all of this information comes together about the patient, how do you actually view it? And we're going to show you a little bit about that in a couple of slides. Next thing you want to look at is the types of data to share. This is a very small list. This list could go on and on. But there's two things you have to remember about the types of data you share. In order to share the information, you have to capture it somewhere electronically. So you can want to share a whole bunch of things, but you need to be able to capture it electronically, and it needs to be relevant. So when you look at something like DNR and healthcare proxy, you have to capture it electronically, even if it's in a PDF. But you have to capture it in an electronic format. And you have to make sure it's updated. So that is something that you want to make sure people are on top of. It's just not a, yes, I have a DNR, no, I don't have a DNR. If the patient changes it during their course of treatment, or if they're a resident in a nursing home and they change it over time, you want to make sure that they're updating that if they're going to be sharing that with the exchange. To share this data, each piece of data has to be built in what's called an interface, or you can couple a bunch of the pieces of data together from an electronic medical record and into one interface. But it's important to tell you a little bit about the cost of the interface, because that's where this can get expensive. So each interface has two sides, and each side has two costs. So the two sides are each of the vendors. One of the vendor is sending the information, and the other vendor is receiving the information. Each of those vendors have a cost for sending and receiving. And there's two types of costs associated with that. One cost is a one-time fee to build the interface, and the other one is an annual fee to maintain that interface. So if you're going to build one interface, say for allergies, that one interface can have four costs. Two of them are just one-time costs, and two of them are annual costs that you have to pay to maintain the interface. Again, we share that with you going in, because as you look at what types of information you want to share with the RIO, you want to make sure that it's data that is going to be relevant to the patient, to the provider who's receiving it. So you may capture allergy information about the patient in electronic format, but if the person you're sharing it with it doesn't need the allergy information, it may not be worth it for you to build it. So you want to think about who's going to be seeing this information and to what benefit, especially within a health home, when you're looking at what connections you want to build. I do know that NICE is working to build an electronic health record interface library to try to reduce these costs so that over time it's the same costs that are built and that the same interfaces that are built with a reduced cost for all those who need it. We spoke a little bit about the different models, and I'm not a technical person, but I am an operations person, so I think it's important to explain in a non-technical way how the data is shared so you can understand where the data is stored from a real perspective. So at eHealth Network of Long Island, we have a federated model. And basically what that means is we segregate our data. So if you could picture in your house a cabinet and of a bunch of different shelves of shelving units, and on the top shelf, is the biggest server you have, and each shelf has a server on it, but on the top shelf is the biggest server you have, and that server we call the Master Patient Index, or the MPI. And that Master Patient Index is going to match the patients, and it's going to make sure that the same Denise Riley from one organization is the same Denise Riley from the second organization, because you want to make sure you're matching and you're showing the data of the same patient. On every shelf after that is a separate server, and each server is dedicated to one facility. So the first server is Southampton, the second server is Stony Brook, and the like. So Stony Brook says that they want to share allergies and medication information. And I go to them as a patient, and they document that I'm allergic to penicillin. And then I go to Conic Bay Hospital, and they treat me, and they're going to share allergies also, and they document that I'm allergic to latex. I happen to be out east, and I'm in Eastern Long Island Hospital, and they're a member of the RIO, and I show up in their emergency room, and they want to know information about me. So they go into the RIO, and they send a message to the Master Patient Index that says, find all the information about me, about Denise Riley, in the RIO. And a message goes to each one of these servers and looks for the matching to use 11 healthcare criteria to match that the same Denise Riley is the same Denise Riley. And what comes back is a screenshot view of all of my information together, and it'll say, Denise is allergic to penicillin, so says Stony Brook. Denise is allergic to latex, so says Peconic Bay. And the information is then compiled together. If any one of those organizations wants to leave the RIO at any time, they leave with their data. Their data is not commingled. That's important because organizations want to know where their data is. So, again, this is a non-technical way of explaining how the data is shared within a RIO. So, how do you get to the information? So, there's two ways to get to the information. This screen shows you specifically about... This screen shows you specifically about consenting. So at eHealth Network of Long Island, we have an electronic consent. We are the only ones in the state that have an electronic consent and an electronic multi-site consent. So that means that in real time, if a patient clicks a box and says they want that organization to see the information, they see it right then and there. And they're consenting for more than one facility at a time. There's two ways you can get to that consent. The first way is the registration clerk goes through your scheduling system. So an interface is built within the scheduling system that you have already. So for workflow, that works out very well because the registration clerk is already within a system, and she doesn't have to leave the system. And you've logged into your Siemens registration system, and the last question asks, do you want to be in the eHealth network? And the patient says yes, and it brings you right to the RIO portal. It never appears that you left. The first time that you go into the system, it authenticates who you are, and it also brings over the patient that you're in. You have to put in your username and password only the first time that you log into the system. After that, it remembers who you are. But it works for workflow. We look at the least amount of keystrokes and clicks of the mouse that you click to get into this. And the consent asks you, do you want to grant deny, or only in an emergency access to these organizations to see your information in the RIA. The patient signs an electronic signature pad, similar to the one that's in the grocery store, and then the information is able to be seen by the organizations that the patient did grant to have access. The other way to go through is through a portal. So it's another icon on your screen, and the registration clerk would click into that, put in a username and password and security authentication, and then look up the patient and then get to the same consenting screen. Again, both ways are ways to get through the system, but when rolling out to your organization, you want to think about workflow and how are you going to get people to actually use the system to be able to see the data that's in there. This, again, does the same thing, talks about seeing the data. In the first scenario, the doctor goes through the electronic medical record. There's a button within the electronic medical record that says RIO or eHealth. They click on the button, and they can see the summary sheet or the CCD of all of the patient's information from all the organizations. Or the doctor goes through a separate system and goes into the icon, puts in a username and password, and then can get access to the information. The information that the patient is seeing, now this is a mock patient, but it'll show you the different categories that are in the different organizations. So here you can see for allergies, Southampton had shared information for allergies, and it said that the patient was allergic to multivitamins, and Stony Brook shared information that the patient was allergic to peanuts. That's how you see the consolidated version of the patient's information. Another advantage that you have within the RIO is you get to see the patients that cross each other. So this shows you, according to this week, Stony Brook sharing information as of January 2011, and as of June 2012, they had 1,863 patients that went to Stony Brook as well as Winthrop. They had 50 patients that went through Stony Brook, Winthrop, and Southampton. Excuse me. So never before could a facility see how many patients crossed their organizations. In a health home, again, this is very beneficial because you can see how many of your patients cross more than one organization. So, again, another benefit of being part of this type of collaboration. So all of this may seem very overwhelming, and it is at times, but you want to understand that it takes time to change. And in order to change from a paper-based system to an electronic system, a couple of things to just remember. You want to build trust within your own organization and with your vendor. It's about building relationships. You want to find the right people and have the right people at the table when it makes time to make these decisions and to come up with what the right product is for your organization. You want to focus on the patient, making sure that is this going to help the patient and is this going to be easy for the patient, as well as the end user, whether it be the doctor or the registration clerk. How involved is this? Is there going to be benefit? Are they going to get the information that they need out of it? And you want to sit back and you want to determine what is the point, what is the turning point of commitment? What is holding back your organization or your staff? Is it the fear of an electronic medical record? Is it the fear of change altogether? Or have you just not done it as an organization because of financial reasons? Whatever the reason may be, hopefully the information that we provided to you today was helpful and able to start you in the right direction, figure out some questions that you can ask yourself as well as your organization, and start to meet with some vendors to come up with some, you know, starting points of information that you could start to ask them about their products that could help you realize things that you like and things that you're questioning about. And to just show you, this is where the information about this presentation, there's a link that you can go to get the information for all the training sessions that the Health Home Medicaid webinars are doing. And these are some future topics that are listed. At this time, I guess, to the operator, we can take some questions. Or Jackie, if you wanted to ask anything.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to register for a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone. You will hear a 3-tone prompt to acknowledge your request. If your question has been answered and you would like to withdraw your registration, please press the 1 followed by the 3. Again, to register for a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4.
Well, Denise, while we're waiting for folks to gear up for a question, I want to say thank you so much for putting this presentation together. It takes a lot of complex information and presents it in a way that shows the fluidity between technology adoption and the integration with the Health Information Exchange. And I hope all the participants appreciated how much technical information you were able to really present in a way that was easy to understand. So I just wanted to say that out loud.
Thank you.
So there aren't any questions per se in the chat. So are there any folks registered for a question, Kathy?
I have one coming in. It'll be just a few moments, and I'll announce that.
Okay. So I think we did get one in the chat while we were waiting on there. So is there a list of EHR vendors somewhere, and are there any recommended EHR vendors that work well with a particular RIO?
So, Ted, there are EHR, a list of the certified EHR vendors on the CMS website. I would also recommend you to have conversations with the staff at NICE about relationships that they've already set up with some of the EHR vendors, maybe for purchasing that, you know, cost containment that is possible, as well as for interfaces. The RIOs can tell you which relationships they already have with some and various different EMRs, EHR companies. I will preface, though, that majority of the EHR companies that are out there and the ones that are certified are for primary care organizations. So when you get into fields like behavioral health or home care or long-term care, it's a different cadre of EHR vendors that are out there. So sometimes it's good and advantageous to speak to some of the other organizations that you work with or partner with to say, have you been down this path before? Have you looked at some EHR vendors? Also, I should have said this in the presentation, but it is so beneficial to go on a site visit. And don't go to a site that the vendor recommends. Talk to people in the community. Say, you know, I'm looking at XYZ EMR. Who do you know out there that has it? And go visit that practice. The staff will be sure to tell you if they love it or if they don't. They can tell you opportunities to look for improvement or things to build upon if you're going to buy it. So definitely I would recommend to do that. And I can't emphasize enough the value of actually going and seeing it in being used in practice.
Ladies and gentlemen, as a reminder, to register for a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4. The question that we did have is that they're not responding.
Jackie, I do see a question from Paula that says, in the presentation, the 18 months was mentioned. What is the start date from the 18 months? January 1st, 2012, or when the program is implemented? I believe it is the clock starts from when your program is implemented. Is that correct, Jackie?
That's my understanding as well. So there were three phases. So it wouldn't be fair to phase three to start your 18 months before you got started.
So when the program started is when the clock starts on the 18 months.
Sure. Now, additional information specific to those requirements for the health homes are posted on the Medicaid website. There's a very extensive FAQ section. So, you know, definitely take a look and see if your questions are answered. If not, there is an email address, and they've been really responsive. I've even shot things through and got answers back. So please go ahead and utilize that website and those tools.
So, Jackie, I did see another question from Stephen. It said, you mentioned RIOs are working together. When do you think there would be standards for data exchange? So I'm happy to announce, and I know the press releases went out this morning, that eHealth Network, Think, and the Brooklyn RIO all signed with NICE already to start our collaboration. I know eHealth Network signed on May 3rd, and we're the first three RIOs that are now going to be sharing data and exchanging data. We are hoping to have that done by the end of the summer between at least the three of us, and hopefully more RIOs will join on. We anticipate more of them joining and having shared connections before the end of the year, so that's very exciting. And the standards for data exchange, I know that NICE right now is working with a lot of the and the whole interoperability work group about getting the EHRs to have standard sets of how the data is exchanged. Jackie, I don't know if you want to add anything on top of that.
Sure. So what NICE did about a year or two ago is sat with several vendors, HIE vendors and EHR vendors, not just those with presence in the state, but those reflective of the entire market, and had the conversation about standardization. One of the reasons why the cost of these interfaces are pretty high is because there isn't a defined standard, if you will, for connecting. So collaboratively with these organizations in several states, they came up with a list of functional specs that would guide or provide standards, if you will, for connecting two entities. So if you're interested in looking at the work of that particular group, I would advise you to log on to interopwg.org. That's interopwg.org. And I'll put that in the chat for everyone. And you can see specifically which standards they have worked collectively on across that entire landscape. So that's a handful of EHR vendors, HIE vendors, and several states that have committed to defining and using HL7, several other standards in the marketplace to try to streamline this process. So I'll put that in the chat for everyone.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to register a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4.
Okay, Denise, would you like to keep going through the chat while we're waiting for folks to register questions?
Sure. It says, from David Ortiz, is there a particular timeline in which the EHR has to be implemented for each program? So again, I think, and Jackie, you may want to answer this also, but depending on when your health home application was signed, the 18 months then does, the clock starts ticking from that point. And it's, again, the requirement is that you are exchanging data already within your EHR with the exchange by the 18 months.
So if you think about it, it's going to take a couple of months of energy to connect an EHR to the HIE. And then it takes a couple of months, 6 months on average, to be live. So if you back into it that way, that should give you a guesstimation. And again, it depends on a variety of different variables, your size, the level of customization in your health record, and how responsive your vendor is on what timelines you can start to think about from adopting, implementing, going live, and then connecting.
So the next question is from Stacy, and it says, will there be an integration between the RIOS and the UAS-NY system? So the UAS-NY system, I believe, is the Uniform Assessment System for New York, and that's a standardization for the assessments across long-term care programs, if that's what the reference is to. Right now, I can tell you from our RIO perspective, we have 13 long-term care facilities within our RIO. A lot of the long-term care facilities are in the market right now to buying electronic medical records, if not purchase them. And we're in the process of figuring out how they can exchange data with us. We're looking to exchange a transfer form, and what we're trying to do is to get the EHR companies to standardize that form so that when a patient moves through one organization to another, that documentation that you need to have when you transfer the patient is readily available, and it's information that was extrapolated from your EHR. A specific integration right now with UAS-NY has not been discussed as far as I know, but I don't know, Jackie, if you have any further update on that.
I do not, so I'm going to take that as an action item and then see if we can get that into the FAQs for the health home participants and respond to that question in that avenue. Thanks for the question.
I think I got all of them. Oh, no, I'm sorry. There was one from Tom. Very well done. Thank you, Tom. Do you have additional information on the federated and alternative models? I specifically don't have that information available to you. I don't know if Jackie does, but depending on which RIO that you are working with, whether they are upstate or downstate, you may want to have a conversation with them to discuss what type of model that they have already, because if you're going to be connecting to the RIO, the point was to discuss what type of model they have so that you have an understanding of where your data is. In the federated model that I showed you before, what we are keeping is a copy of the participant's data. So when I told you that Stony Brook was sharing allergies, we don't have the original documentation. We have a copy of it. So if Stony Brook ever would never use our data to restore their system, they have their own backups for them. It's just a copy, and it's not their entire record. It's only a piece of their record. But that's what gets stored on that server. So you want to understand from the perspective of which Rio you're working with is, I'm going to share this piece of data. Where does it go? Where's the copy of it? How do I get it back? How does it get restored? Do I have to keep hardware in my site, or is there a hosted location? And again, in the collaboration working with NICE, many of the downstate RIOs are working collectively to pull that infrastructure together to avoid duplication. And if you're in an upstate RIO, you may want to look at how they're doing that right now in their organization so you have that understanding.
I do have a question over the phone, and it comes from the line of Mark Castellani. Please proceed with your question.
Hi. Missed the interop.org full path to that, because it's certainly when I typed in interop.org, it has nothing to do with standards. So if you could give that again, I would appreciate it.
I will. Let me just double check, and I will repost that if I typed that incorrectly. I was able to get it. So it's interopwg.org, as mentioned in the chat.
WG. And,
okay. If you click on, well, there's a lot of press, and I think it's worthwhile to go through it. But if you click on the Documents tab, that page will list all of the documents this group collectively worked on and have agreed upon with regard to patient statewide send and receive of patient records, patient data query services. They've worked on a constrained CCD and several other documents. So it's a pretty robust grouping of materials that, again, there was a very significant number of vendors who participated in these discussions.
Excellent. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I have no other questions at this time.
So, Denise, I think we covered everything in the chat. You want to wait a couple of seconds just in case folks are typing other questions?
Sure, that's fine. There was a question, I think it was answered in the chat, but it asked if this information was available or if the slides were available, and I think, Jackie, you said that you post them, right?
Yeah, so it gives us about a day or two to collect the audio and to get them posted to the Medicaid website. So the audio and the PowerPoint presentation in a PDF form will be made available to everybody, as well as all of the materials from the other sessions that are listed on the web. Okay, so if there aren't any more questions, we want to thank everyone for their time today. Please go ahead and visit the Medicaid website. There's a lot of rich material, and they all overlap and integrate really well, from the presentation Denise did to the interoperability presentation that is more technical in nature with specifics about standards and that type of thing. And we hopefully look forward to seeing responses from the survey that will go out afterwards. Please take the time and fill that out. We would love your input, and if there's additional information that we can collaboratively present to this audience, we would love to do so.
And I'd just like to thank everybody for calling in today, and I hope that this was helpful for you and it gives you some information to move forward with.
Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude the conference call for today. We thank you for your participation and ask that you please disconnect your lines. Have a great day.